Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. They're calling it Conservatism 101, a campaign to bring 20th century and contemporary conservative thought to American college campuses. In a course. It just showed up in our backyard. We thought we'd take a look this hour on Point, Conservatism 101. You can join the conversation. In a country with so many conservatives, is that view, that reading list, really not there already at American colleges? Do you welcome it? Is it a bridge, a beachhead? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Providence, Rhode Island, is Terrence George. He's a 19-year-old sophomore at Brown University who led the initiative to have a course taught on conservatism. He's also president of Brown's Republican Club. Terrence George, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So what do you have there? What's the course you've got mounted?
Well, the name of the course is called Modern Conservatism in America. And it's basically a survey of conservative thought over the many centuries that it's been around. We trace it from its beginnings, starting a little bit before the French Revolution, to more modern forms of conservatism, neoconservatism, compassionate conservatism. And the goal is really to inform the students about this political ideology that influences all of our lives so much.
Now, can it really be true that it wasn't there, Terrence? I mean, you've got on your reading list Edmund Burke and Thomas Paine and even Milton Friedman, William Buckley, Ayn Rand. Can it really be that those were not, in one way or another, being taught at Brown?
Well, sadly, I think it is true. As you said, I'm a sophomore. I've been at Brown for 2 years, and I've talked to many of my friends at Brown, and I've benefited from learning about political liberalism. I've learned about Marxism and other political traditions, but I really haven't seen an in-depth treatment of conservative ideology, and I thought I was being shortchanged, so to speak. So I wanted to somehow fill the gap in the curriculum. So that's why I wanted to have this course at Brown.
Tell us more about it. Who's teaching it?
Well, the course is being taught by Professor Stephen Calabrese. He's one of the founders of the Federalist Society, and he's very knowledgeable on the topic.
Was it difficult to get it launched there? It's an independent study course. I guess that means is it a full regular course, Terrence, or something different?
Well, at Brown, we have a program where students can submit course ideas. This course, however, is a full credit course. I'd be getting an A or a B or whatever on my transcript, just like I would from any other course.
And you're into it a few weeks here already? What's the turnout? What's the enrollment?
Well, we have several students enrolled thus far. One of my hopes, is to get more students from around the community by advertising for the course so we can inform as many people as possible.
And it brings conservatism pretty much up to date. I mean, you've got, you're reading Pat Buchanan and George Bush and Robert Bork, Charles Krauthammer, Irving Kristol, Norman Podhoretz. What about the other big voices in conservatism now? Do you read or listen to, I don't know, Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh?
Well, those guys certainly do interesting work in the conservative movement, but one of the goals with this course is to study the intellectual, academic aspect of conservatism as an ideology. So we're not really looking at the conservative movement and the policies and suggestions for policy. We're looking at political ideology from the conservative perspective. So what's our political view with respect to the Soviet Union. We're looking at neoconservative political ideology. We're looking at conservative responses to postmodernism. So it's certainly more of an intellectual pursuit rather than a popular one.
Terrence George, please stand by. We've got joining us right now as well from Washington, Katie Pavlich. She's a press secretary for Conservatism 101, this project. Katie, thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be here. Thank you, Tom.
I think you've just graduated from where?
I graduated from the University of Arizona in May of 2010.
Tell us about the Conservatism 101 project. It's not very old. It's not in very many places yet, but what's it about?
Like you said, it's pretty new, and what we do at Conservatism 101 is allow students to really take hold of their own education and engage with their university administrators to bring new classes about conservatism to their campuses. We've seen a lack coming from the students who feel that, like Terrence said, that there is not really a voice there for the conservative movement, especially on the intellectual side through classrooms. So we at Conservatism 101 provide that gateway for students.
Have you done a survey? Are you so sure that these conservative thinkers aren't being taught? I mean, doesn't Edmund Burke show up in philosophy classes? Milton Friedman certainly gets taught in economics classes. I mean, Thomas Paine there in terms of the America's founding period, or Ayn Rand in terms of mid-20th century thought. Are you sure they don't show up currently? Was it the fact that they were missing, or the way in which they may have been presented that is behind this effort?
Well, I don't think that Conservatism 101 would be a success. And like you said, it's still brand new, but it wouldn't be so successful this far if there wasn't a need for our organization to help students bring those perspectives into our universities.
But have you done a survey? Are you sure they're missing? I mean, are you sure they're not out there?
I mean, I was a political science major at the University of Arizona, and I wasn't seeing a whole lot of that. Clearly, Terrence has not seen that at his university either, and I think the general consensus coming from conservative students is that they're not really getting a whole lot of in-depth observation of conservative philosophy, and that's why we're here.
Who's backing the Conservative 101 project, Katie?
We are working with the Institute and Collegiate Studies, and we're also working with the Leadership Institute to help us kind of get our feet on the ground. But really, it's an independent initiative that was started by students at the University of Virginia.
The Leadership Institute provides funding and a framework for you to work from?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so does the Intercollegiate Studies Institute as well.
Right. The Leadership Institute, I'm looking here, they say that their mission is to increase the number and effectiveness of conservative activists. Looking here, they say they don't analyze policy. They teach conservative Americans how to influence policy through activism and leadership. Is Conservatism 101 a proselytizing project in that case?
No, it's not a proselytizing project at all. We don't go and ask students to join our organizations. We have students come to us. So students simply come to us for help, and we are willing to give them that help in return.
Terrence, what do you hope to find in this? An education, a bridge to other students, a greater profile for conservative thinking on your campus? What?
Well, quite simply, I hope to educate myself further on these topics and educate my community at large. I think, though, some of these conservative thinkers are taught. Milton Friedman is taught in some economics courses, I'm sure. I think that this is quite unique to the syllabus that these conservative thinkers are being presented and juxtaposed against some of their liberal counterparts, so students can really assess the ideas and see where they came from and see some of their effects. So I think it's quite necessary, and by no means is it meant to indoctrinate anyone. We have liberal students in our class, and I can assure you none of them would stick around if we were trying to force any ideology down their throats.
Katie, if there's not more representation of these thinkers on American college campuses, why do you think that's so?
Well, I think that maybe conservative students feel that there isn't a place for them to have a voice, and Conservatism 101 is a good way for them to not only study their own philosophy, but also invite other students who may not know about conservatism or who may have an opposite point of view to also learn about the philosophy.
I mean, but are you looking for that kind of conversation, or are you looking to, I don't know, bring conservatism, to triumph in academe?
No, absolutely not. I mean, we're not advocating for conservatism by any means. We're just simply presenting the idea that we can study conservatism as a philosophy. I mean, there's a lot of great people behind the movement, and we really think that it deserves an in-depth look at our universities. So we invite people from all stripes to take our course, and that's, we're not advocating on behalf of conservatism, just simply presenting the idea.
Terrence, you're head of the Republican Club at Brown. Is it popular? Are you lonely as a conservative in your particular institution or not?
Well, as you may know, Brown is known as the liberal ivy, and for a reason. Brown does have a somewhat small population of conservatives, but I found it to be a rather salubrious experience for myself. I guess you could say it's sort of like steel sharpening steel. I'm forced to defend my opinions and analyze them and really question them in a way that I may not otherwise do, as I'm forced to debate fellow students on issues. So, by and large, I've found being a conservative at Brown as a good experience.
Do you think you'll go in a conservative and come out a liberal?
Well, I don't think Brown is going to change my political views any more than my course is going to change the students' political views.
Katie, so far you've got University of Virginia, Brown, American University, is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
What's your hope? What's your goal?
Our hope is that, you know, students who feel that this is lacking at the university will come to us and we can give them the same groundwork and backing that we've given Terrence George at Brown and the students at UVA and the students at American University. So we're hoping that students who find the need that they need conservative philosophy courses on their campuses come to us so we can provide that for them.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the push for Conservatism 101, the campaign to plant the conservative flag in American college course books. Katie Pavlich is with us from Conservative 101. She joins us from Washington, D.C. Terrence George has just led an effort to get a course affiliated with the movement on the books at Brown University. He joins us from Providence, Rhode Island. Joining us right now as well from Providence, Rhode Island, is Catherine Bergeron. She's dean of the college at Brown University. Dean Bergeron, thank you very much for joining us for a minute today.
I'm very glad to be here.
So does the fact that you've opened your doors to this course say that things were out of whack or missing something before?
I don't think that would be the way to look at it. I think maybe the interesting way to look at it would be to go back to something that Katie said a moment ago about the desire to engage students with their own education. It's well known that Brown has had a longstanding tradition of doing just that, and that's exactly how Terrence came about offering this course.
You mean if they propose something and they make a good case for it and give a good outline, let's do it?
There is a program that allows students to develop a course in collaboration with a faculty member that would then be a full credit experience, yes. And what's interesting about this is related to a belief that independent learning experiences can be among the most important aspects of a liberal experience, liberal education.
So you're for independent learning experiences and students standing up to help shape the curriculum, but what about the question that's raised here, and Terrence raises it himself, this perspective that at Brown and maybe at other universities, there's an underrepresentation of the long tradition of conservative thinking. What do you say to that?
I would say that the university is not actually about a place where students come to acquire a set of beliefs, right? As much as they come to actually grapple with multiple perspectives, many different ways of seeing a question or a political problem. And I actually think that Terrence, in his own answer, reflects on this.
But let's say if we look at conservatism not as a set of beliefs, but as a tradition of thinking and scholarship.
Right. You yourself were saying earlier that surely there are courses that take up, the works of Burke or Wendell Berry. And the answer would be, of course there are. In fact, even last semester there was a course on, the welfare state and a course on the questions of social reform from an economic perspective that I think would take in a variety of questions, the same type that Terrence himself is grappling with. What I think is interesting about his course actually is its capaciousness. How much it tries to take in. It's in a way a survey that goes back to the 18th century. And I think the question that it raises is not so much, were these thinkers right, but what is it that what perspective do they come from?
Mm-hmm. It's certainly a huge swath of thinkers that they've got here, from Burke right on forward. Is there a comparable class at Brown on, you know, liberalism 101?
That's a good question. I think that what's interesting about a place like Brown is that survey courses may not be the flavor, right? I mean, mm-hmm. courses that really help students to critique, and close reading courses might be mm-hmm. more of a specialty, you know, of the political science faculty.
I mean, do you think then, here's a survey course in conservatism now, at least for this semester on your campus, do you think we need more of that? If you step back from directly from your role as dean there, but look at American society, look at Republican representation in Congress right now, for example, in many state legislatures and state houses. Do we need more conservatism taught on campuses in order to have a ground for understanding between American citizens when they're talking about big issues of the time? Or do you think the balance has been about right, and this is just so that Terrence can, you know, show initiative in his personal university life?
I think that what a university education is about is developing the ability to debate from multiple points of view. That's the bottom line of a liberal education, you know. College education is not really about acquiring a set of beliefs, but really about gaining perspective on the modes of thought that have actually allowed belief systems to exist in the first place, right?
Right.
One of the things that I think is interesting in this respect is how sometimes personally upsetting courses in religion can be for students, right? Because they are attracted often to come to the class
mm-hmm.
Because of their own personal beliefs. And then they discover in the class that what it's not about is confirming or refuting those beliefs, but a sort of dispassionate analysis of where those beliefs might come from.
You know, this course that's being taught, that Terrence has launched there, is being taught by Stephen Calabresi. Of course, he's a co-founder of the Federalist
that's
Society.
Right.
Are you confident that there will be a dispassionate, scholarly approach to conservatism in this class when it's taught by a leading conservative figure?
I think the first of all, the course is co-taught, right? And so it's a small handful of students that are working together with a faculty member. And Brown students are fairly outspoken. So I think it might be, one might predict that there's a lively dialogue as opposed to, you know, a force-feeding of ideas. And I think we just heard Terrence say something along those lines.
Mm. Catherine Bergeron, Dean of the College at Brown University, we're grateful to you for being with us for a minute today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I want to bring our callers in. Katie, Terrence, please stand by. Adam in West Hartford, Connecticut. Adam, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I have a comment and a question. And, I attended a traditionally liberal college at Wesleyan University. And, you know, overall felt a serious sort of lack of serious consideration of conservative thought in curriculum. And, you know, what your guests are talking about is this desire for intellectual engagement in conservatism and sort of a rejection of sort of the sensationalist and the Fox News type conservatism that many of us believe is conservatism. I guess my question is, you know, what opportunities of engagement do your guests see with people of liberal backgrounds? I mean, this seems like in isolation is one thing, but really this should be giving us the tools to come to the table with disagreeing positions and be able to engage more effectively.
Adam, it's an interesting question. Your line's breaking up a little bit, but let me put to Katie and Terrence. I mean, Katie, do you think this ultimately leads to more engagement, or are you sort of building a conservative fortress here?
No, I mean, like I said earlier, we invite everyone from every political perspective to join the class if there's room. the good thing about our syllabus is that we have students write down their own thoughts in a journal, and part of the most classes is discussion. So if liberal students or libertarian students or conservative students want to take the course, they can come to class and discuss things. And in a time where everyone's calling for civility, I think that the best way to get, to accomplish that is, like your caller just said, is to get away from the sensational and really stick to the philosophical side of political thought,
but,
especially in conservatism.
But your one of your major backers is all about not creating engagement necessarily, but creating conservative activists to influence policy, not even analyze it. Their literature says to influence policy through conservative activists. Is that engagement, or is that, you know, training troops?
Right. Well, the Leadership Institute does have that goal, but Conservatism 101 is a separate organization. And if you look at our goals and our mission statement and the classes that we provided and the material in those classes, it really is about coming to the table, allowing any student to join the class, and really having a conversation about what conservatism really means.
Terrence, our caller presumes in his comments there that you're looking at something, I don't know, higher or finer or different from maybe Fox News or Rush Limbaugh or Glenn Beck. Is that true, or do you see them as standard bearers today of the tradition that you're studying in this course?
Well, I think the tradition that we're studying in this course is certainly more in-depth than you might see on Fox News or you might hear on Rush Limbaugh. I saw having this course at Brown is really an opportunity to not only teach my fellow conservatives at Brown, but to inform everyone as to what the conservative tradition really was. A lot of people at Brown have never heard of Burke. In fact, no one who I've talked to at Brown has heard of Edmund Burke, known as the father of conservatism. And I think that's certainly a shame. So I think this course is really helping to inform people of the conservative tradition and how it's affected our lives for so many years.
Look outside of your course and maybe even your campus for a minute, Terrence. I mean, do you see this kind of education as really helping build bridges between Americans who can often seem really riven these days between different perspectives, or does it just build up bulwarks from which to oppose one another?
Well, as I said, our course has both liberals and conservatives, both neoconservatives and compassionate conservatives. I think a lot of animosity is bred from ignorance. If you don't know where someone's ideology is coming from, sure, you're going to strike out against it because you don't understand it. Now, if you can understand ideology, if you can understand why people believe what they believe and what their agenda is, I think you can... You no longer have that excuse to strike out against them, and you can hopefully work together with them, find some common ground.
Let's get a call from Anne in Middlesex, Vermont. Hi, Anne. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I'm a parent of a student who's now attending Goucher College in Maryland. I highly applaud this movement to bring conservative teaching to campuses. I think generally what's going on in general... I think that student populations, and I'm making a gross generalization, student populations, just by dint of the age that they are at when they're at college, tend to be liberal thinkers. They just tend to be, and I've also noticed that faculty as well tend to be liberal thinkers. And I think that's what's really underneath all of this. One thing that I wanted to say, I have a high regard for the president of Goucher College because he brings speakers. He brought a speaker last year to the campus, a contemporary conservative. There's a lot of uproar on campus among students saying, how can you do this? And this guy, we're not going to listen to this guy. And he retorted back to them, this is what liberal education is about. You listen to multiple points of view, and you pay attention to them. They have something to say as well. And so I think what to wrap what I'm saying up is that what these students who are conservatives are feeling so outnumbered by such a vast majority of students who just by the nature of their age that they're at, tend to think in a more liberal way.
I think we've got it, and I appreciate your call very much. I want to get one more right here while we can. Joe in Newburyport, Massachusetts. Joe, you're on the air. What do you think, Joe?
Hello, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I think, I just say, I'm a very independent thinker, and I'm open-minded and progressive, and I think this is great. Some may call me a liberal, but I consider myself independent. I think this is great to offer this. I would be tempted, if I was a student, if I had the courage to the courage of my convictions to take this course, because I would probably disagree with most, if not all, of what's presented. Now, I would just ask, does conservative mean open-minded? Does liberal generally mean open-minded? Are you teaching them to expand their horizons or to close down their horizons? Now, the word conservative, in my approach, I think it's misunderstood. I believe it as being conserve our resources, conserve oil, conserve this. How has it been bastardized into closed-mindedness, which I think a lot of people probably would be scared of this course because they think we were limiting our minds and shrinking our minds rather than expanding. So as long as it's expansive, I say great, and I would be tempted to take it if I had the courage to, because, like I said, I would probably have to debate right, and look closely right at my views.
Right. Joe, I appreciate your call. Terrence, what about it? How do you guard against closed-mindedness? Here our caller, Joe, associates closed-mindedness with some portion of contemporary conservatism.
Well, the good thing about conservatism is it's such an intellectually diverse tradition that it's mighty hard to be closed-minded in a course like this. Students are forced to decide or learn about, well, not forced, but they're given the opportunity to learn about different sorts of conservatism, decentralism, neoconservatism, libertarianism, and there's no way that you can be all these different types of conservatism at the same time. So, you know, you have to listen to one side of the debate, the other side of the debate, and really, you know, find where you fit, or if you don't fit at all, find what problems you have with the different traditions. So I think this course is really forcing people to expand their minds rather than hunker down.
And what about the pretty tough critique that's out there these days, even from some that we associate with conservatism? David Frum caught my eye the other day. He had a tweet. He said, "Never cease to be amazed how much conservatives have internalized radical postmodernist denial of objective truth." And he was writing not long ago, he said, "What he fears is the worst of all worlds, a Republican majority that rejects not only extremist ideas, but all ideas." I mean, are you open, Terrence, in your course to that, to a really tough contemporary critique of conservatism? And where, you know, in some quarters it's seen as a kind of, some threads of it as kind of know-nothing movement these days.
Sure, bring it on. We love the intellectual debate in this course. The thing about conservatism, at least as we're studying it in this course, is it's not a stagnant movement. It's something that's been evolving over the years. As we talked about earlier, it really got its start to some extent in the 1700s, and it's been evolving. It's split off into these various different threads as times have changed, as the needs of people have changed, as ideology has progressed. So it's not something that stands still. It's really a very evolving, very complex ideology.
We've got a lot of response here on Facebook. Steve Koss says, "Teach yes, preach no." Ann says, "The day conservatism is taught on college campuses is the day we might as well cease to have any federal funding for secondary education, because minds will close, learning will cease." Sonia says, "Sure, why not? I want to be as informed as I can be, even to study and know about beliefs I do not hold as my own." And John says, "If Edmund Burke were alive today, would he repudiate Sarah Palin?" We'll come back and put that to our guests today. We're also going to hear, when we return, from Michael Berube, who's written about the push for more conservatism and maybe a critique of liberalism on American college campuses. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking today about the push for Conservatism 101, campaign to plant the conservative flag in American college course books. Katie Pavlich is with us from the group. They're on three campuses now, looking beyond, just opened a course this semester at Brown University in Rhode Island. Terrence George is with us, head of the Republican Club at Brown. He led the initiative to get this course on campus. And we're using it as an opportunity to talk about what is being taught on campuses these days and how whether teaching conservatism in particular is a bridge to better understanding We're joined right now from University Park, Pennsylvania, by Michael Berube, professor of English Literature, Science, Technology, Society at Pennsylvania State University. He's author of What's Liberal About the Liberal Arts, Classroom Politics, and Bias, in quotes, in Higher Education. Michael Berube, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
You were in this up to your elbows a few years back. When
still
David,
am, I think.
David Horowitz was out there, and there was a big attack on American universities for only being liberal, for being overwhelmingly liberal. What do you think of this effort now emerging? We've got a couple of students, or Katie, just recently a student, pushing it. What about this moment in terms of what's being taught and understood and discussed on American college campuses? Do you think we've got enough range in the conversation?
Yeah, I think we do, and I think it's actually a much more interesting moment than I saw 5-6 years ago. There's a lot to like about this initiative. The two questions I have about it, I think, have already been asked and addressed, but these are the two questions I would have. Mm-hmm. One is, what's the difference here between doing an academic program of study over against something like a political training institute? And the sponsorship by the Leadership Institute raises that question, but I think Katie's addressed that adequately. Leadership Institute is Morton Blackwell's outfit, as you say. It's about grooming conservative leaders, but that doesn't mean they set the agenda for the course. The other thing has just come up. I was waiting, thinking, hoping Terrence would address this. Does the course present conservatism as a kind of, two centuries monolith? For one of the things that would be most interesting to me about a course like this is not just the question of what people believe at the end of the course, what their political content might be, but how do they understand the conflicts within conservatism? Terrence mentioned, compassionate conservatives against neoconservatives, but you could also say, look, the religious conservatives, the social conservatives over against the economic libertarian conservatives. Mm-hmm. You could talk about the moment in the 60s where Buckley basically read the John Birch Society out of the party. Mm-hmm. And Terrence is talking about this really starting with Burke. Which is a great starting point, of course, his critique of the French Revolution, his critique of radical change. But that makes conservatism very much a modern phenomenon, which is what we're talking about. There's another kind of conservatism, too, that is very much a critique of modernity. It's the kind of conservatism that talks about standing athwart history, yelling stop. And I think giving students a wider access to the varieties of conservative thought over the last couple centuries is entirely commendable.
We'll look at those. Let me just ask you, if I may, first, do you think that American college students, by and large, are coming out of universities these days understanding the conservative tradition, or are they coming out ignorant of that? And is that a problem for our society where conservatism is so potent in our political life?
I would say there are too many students coming out ignorant of both the conservative and liberal major traditions. I wish there were more courses in, the history of Western philosophy and thought where you'd have Burke alongside Mill, Marx, Cardinal Newman, the whole range. So I'd be when you speak about planting the flag, right? I think there are whole areas of the university where this is not a problem whatsoever. Economics, to some extent law, economics especially, I think Hayek and Friedman have been dominant for decades. In law, you've got, Richard Epstein, the law and economics movement. There are whole areas, and of course, business schools, there are whole areas that simply take the free market model for granted. The question for me is, what about these areas of the university like mine, like the arts and humanities, mm-hmm. that are clearly dominated by liberal professors, liberal students, liberal thought? What is a conservative take on the arts and humanities these days? I'm still waiting to hear that answer. I wish there were more students right of center who really were invested in the arts and humanities and came to our courses and went to our graduate programs.
Why do you think your arena is dominated by liberal thinkers, as you say?
I'm trying to avoid circular answers with that. I sometimes think that, the arts and humanities are dominated by liberals for the same reason, Hollywood and Broadway are. This is where liberals go. But that's not always true. I mean, there used to be, you take magazines like the New Criterion or the Hudson Review, Commentary in its older days, where there was a cogent and kind of, deeply engaged conservative critique of the contemporary arts and humanities. And, of course, then there are all the people in the arts and humanities mm-hmm. over the course of the last 5,000 years who you could call conservative in one way or another. So I'm not really sure over the last couple of decades what transpired to create a sort of such a dominance of liberal thought in these fields. I think partly also it's a question of, look at the job market in academia. How many young conservatives out there really want to do, you know, 6 to 10 years of a PhD in the arts and humanities with maybe a third of a chance of getting a tenure-track job at the end of it? I think sometimes conservatives apply sort of a rational choice basis to this kind of thing and consider, you know, the arts and humanities, a lifetime of study is really not worth it.
Terrence George,
I hope that's not the case.
Yeah, but you've certainly written that it seems to be self-selecting towards liberals. Terrence, about it? To the extent that your course is a kind of critique just by its existence of the balance of what's taught, I guess, at your school, you've said as much. Is there something in the conservative community itself that sort of leans against deeper engagement in at least the arts and humanities, Terrence?
No, I don't think so at all. I know that there are organizations such as the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, which are dedicated to, they're conservative organizations, but they're dedicated to in-depth academic study of social sciences and of humanities. So I don't think so. I think one of the problems is this is sort of a cycle of sorts. Conservative students find it hard to find advisors who agree with them and want to help them with research, so they're discouraged from going to graduate school. So I think that's certainly part of the problem. You have such a liberal environment, and conservative students find that they don't have any friends there, so they get out of academia, and I think that's unfortunate.
Michael, are you giving the cold shoulder as a class to conservatives?
No, not at all. But I think Terrence is right. I think this is a self-selecting thing all the way down, even before graduate school. And conservatives do, in some cases, get the sense that they're not welcome. All I have to say to that is what I said in my book, is that the environment for women in academia was even more hostile 40 years ago. And they went at it for a couple decades. And in some fields now, there's something like an equal gender divide. And, excuse me, in my own classes, first of all, you know, there really isn't a standard liberal conservative left-right line on American literature. Mm. There I'm just mainly concerned with making sure people do the reading and do it thoughtfully. But now I'm teaching courses in disability in the humanities, disability studies, the study of varieties of embodiment and kinds of mindedness. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding that it's really impossible to predict where someone is going to come out politically on this topic. And even though I have some strong views and some well-researched positions on this, that, or the other aspect of disability law or prenatal screening and selective abortion, there's a topic for you. Mm-hmm. I find that I've never penalized a student for disagreeing with me. I've been more explicit about that, though, in recent years. There is no requirement you agree with a thing I say, and there is no penalty for disagreeing as long as it's cogent and well-reasoned.
That's probably a good position. Let's go to our callers, Alex in North Andover, Massachusetts. Alex, you're on the air.
Hi, yes, I've been enjoying the show. I'm a 1989 graduate of an Ivy League school, and you know, I do really feel as though students leave many, many universities in the United States really lacking an understanding of conservatism and any real introduction to conservatism. You were asking before about sort of universities in many ways, some suggest dominated by liberals, and my experience, that's to some degree true, and I agree with the guest you were just speaking with, mm-hmm. but I also think that liberalism has fully, in many ways as they should, fully embraced the Enlightenment, but the students should know that traditional conservatism is much more skeptical about the Enlightenment. That's in many ways the root of Burke. He is skeptical,
right.
Yes, primarily the French Revolution, but certainly of the Enlightenment. He's very skeptical, as conservatives are, about the human perfectibility. And the students are not, I find, in any real way introduced to these notions. I think it's dangerous if they're not introduced to these notions, because we know, I think, at the extreme, they can be seduced by sort of utopian plans. And I think the bulwark of conservatism is really an incredible, it arms kids with to resist the sort of a call to utopia that we know in the 20th century has led to terrible, terrible events, totalitarian rule and everything else.
Some terrible events and as well as, you know, to some of the very high-minded American ideals, certainly with plenty of Enlightenment thinking at the birth of this country that have led to great accomplishments too. Terrence, what about it? Are you looking to roll the tape back to the Enlightenment itself and say no thank you as part of the attitude in Conservatism 101?
Well, I certainly don't think a course at Brown can undo the Enlightenment, but
You never know from tiny mustard seeds?
Well, I don't know about that, but, you know, conservatives do accept some Enlightenment principles, of course. We believe that all are equal under God and things of that sort. But I think with this course, we're informing students about the conservative tradition as it's been. And I think your caller raises a pretty good point about some of the ideas of the perfectibility of mankind and how that sort of does get taught, and a lot of students seem to accept that. I know at Brown we have several socialist clubs that are quite large, and I sometimes can't help but wonder to what extent would students change their ideas about conservatism if they were in our course, and you know, would they still believe that their Marxist ideas are absolutely true? What would the debate be? So I'm trying to get some of those students into the course, too.
David in Wallingford, Connecticut. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm the father of two daughters who recently graduated, one from Colby and one from Dickinson, and they voted for McCain. And they purposely did not tell their professors because they would have been ridiculed in class, as it was their friends ridiculed them. My wife and I are presently students at Trinity. And last semester, my wife had a professor who felt very comfortable in stating all of his views, and she elected not to argue because I think there's both a sense of intimidation and the unknown result of having staked out your turf.
So, what, you think there's an actively hostile environment? I mean, isn't part of the point to step up and say what you think, David, and then, you know, engage the debate or the counter-argument? Isn't that what a university education is about?
Well, my guess is that when the power is held by the person expressing personal beliefs, it kind of leaves the academic area. In the case of in Connecticut, the fellow referred to our recent Republican candidate as the wrestler in a very demeaning way and ignored some of the other facts. So I think that daily you make decisions not to respond if you're a common sense conservative, which we are, because you, A, don't want to be in disfavor, and, B, the result might not be helpful to your college career.
Katie Pavlich, are you looking to bring about a power shift in conversations on American college campuses?
Not necessarily a power shift, but definitely a neutral stance. I mean, we do see liberal professors profess their political views in their classrooms. So having a class on conservatism allows for a safe venue for liberal and conservative students to really have a debate and not feel like they're going to be reprimanded for their personal beliefs.
Do you see a lack of safety, Michael Berube, in classes today? Students unwilling or fearful of expressing their views in a way that might reveal their politics or their philosophy?
I wouldn't call it a lack of safety. I would call it, in some classrooms, and I wish I had come up with this phrase myself, but it was instead someone in an exchange with me said, some classrooms have a kind of moral mist to them. Where it is understood that everyone in the room, for example, agrees that, you know, single-payer health care is the greatest good for all. And anyone who, you know, raises their hand to argue against that sort of effectively has to argue twice, once to make their point and once to make the point that they should make their point. But I find there's two things about this. One is I want to ask Terrence, how many Marxist students are there really out there? It's got to be a small subset of the people actually wearing Che T-shirts. And to Katie, you know, for the fact that there are liberal professors out there with liberal beliefs, we really and you surely don't want professors without qualities. You want professors whose convictions are well-grounded and who are articulate and fair in expressing them, and I'll stress this again, who do not set students at a discount or who penalize them for cogent, well-reasoned responses. So a certain amount of advocacy of such and such a position in a classroom is okay. The question is what kind of moral mist that advocacy creates.
Let me get one more call. We'll try and turn to that. Bill in Berea, Kentucky. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Thank you. Yes, I guess my primary question would be is whether or not this course in conservatism at Brown is going to be offered as a philosophy course or as a social science course. I think it makes a great deal of difference from the perspective which it's taken. And also, I would think that a prerequisite for a course in conservatism would be a course in political philosophy so that students would come to the course with a broad perspective.
That's a beautiful wish. If they would already have a kind of across the board insight or education before they come to this one. Terrence, what about the category here? Philosophy, social science, or as independent study, is it uncategorized?
Well, technically it's uncategorized, but I think this is certainly a study in conservatism as a political philosophy. Personally, I did take an introductory political philosophy course last year, and I found that a lot of these people who I've made sure to include in our syllabus at Brown weren't on the general political philosophy course reading list at all. We read a lot of Marx and Mill, but there was no Burke. And I found that to be unfortunate, and that was part of my impetus for this course. Nonetheless, I've made it a point to include some of those more liberal thinkers on the syllabus so people can really get a debate started in the course.
Katie, what's your vision here? If it should all go your way, what would it look like?
Well, I would hope that any student who wants to start this course at their university would come to us and we can get that going, and that the administration would be open and willing to allow students to take hold of their own education and their own future and allow this course to be on campus. I know that we're running out of time, but the great thing about Edmund Burke, which is what started this whole thing, is that he engaged people in debate. And we're simply doing that at the university level by bringing conservatism to all students at our college campuses.
And do you think the country would be more fiercely polarized on the other side of that vision or less, Katie?
I think less. And I think that allowing everyone to understand each other's political philosophy also allows us to find common ground.
Katie Pavlich works with Conservatism 101. She joined us from Washington. Terrence George, a sophomore at Brown, joined us from Providence, Rhode Island. And Michael Barabé at Penn State. Thank you so much to all of you for being with us. And listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.